Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender. And, you know, we've been talking a little bit this week just about what it means to love one another. What's the craziest thing that you have ever done in the name of love? Have you planned and executed an elaborate proposal, maybe saved for months to buy your special someone a special gift, something they've always wanted? Or maybe it's something different, like you've put yourself in harm's way to protect someone that you loved, or sacrificed a year's pay or a week's pay to help people out who are in need. Well, amazing things can happen and do happen when love moves from this emotion to an action. And my guest for today has many stories of what can happen when love actually gets legs. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest for today. Bob Goff is the New York Times best-selling author of Love Does, as well as an attorney who founded Restore International, a nonprofit human rights organization operating in Uganda, India, and Somalia. Bob speaks for leadership, church, and university events, inspiring current and future influencers to get to the do part of life. In addition to his work at Goff and DeWalt Law Firm and humanitarian work through Restore International, Bob also serves as a Hungarian consul for the Republic of Uganda and teaches law at Pepperdine Law School. Welcome, Bob.
Hey, thanks a million for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you here. I had read your book, Love Does, a few years ago, and then when I found out I got to interview you, I had to look at it again and was reminded just of how amazing your stories were for getting to the heart of this thing called love. It seems that your philosophy as you wrote this book was, hey, I felt this way about something, and then this happened to me, and then maybe I kind of felt this way. Is that kind of how you were trying to reach us through your writing?
Yeah, that's it. Actually, the publisher of the book called up and asked if I'd write a book, and I said, well, I don't know, will you build a school? I'll trade you. One book for one school. And he said, well, tell me about the school. And I said, all right, it's 340 child soldiers in northern Uganda and 40 teachers. And they said, big school? I said, big book. So I made him pay me in advance. I didn't know if it would be any good. And so we built the school and wrote a book. And I don't think we need to be taught anything about love. I think that's that idea of telling stories. And the people that have influenced me the most were the ones that made sense of something through their stories, something I could identify with. So I just started writing down some stories of some things that seemed to make sense to me in ways I've understood. And I started out each chapter by saying, I used to think this, but now I'm thinking that, right? So to just let everybody know, I'm changing my mind constantly, and maybe some people that read it are too. And we're all in the same boat. We're all just learning about love instead of figuring out that we've got it mastered. But while we're learning, we don't need to sit in a chair. You do your best learning kind of on the way. I do my best thinking like on a plane, right? Whatever I can write on the back of a barf bag. That's all my plan. I'm leaving tomorrow morning for Somalia again. And we've got a school in Mogadishu. See, we took all the money from this book. I think they sold about a million of them. And we built a school in Uganda, and we built a school in Mogadishu, Somalia. And they won't teach little girls how to read or write in Somalia. You know why? They're girls.
Because they're girls.
And there's nothing scares a terrorist more than a girl with a book. So we just started a school. I'm like, forget it. So we started that about a year and a half ago. And then we started one about 9 months ago in northern Iraq, outside of Mosul. And but that's the idea. Instead of just thinking about it or learning about it, like just go make some moves. That's what a movement is, just a bunch of people making moves. And then go make a big deal about it. Just do the next thing, whatever seems like a good idea. And that's the crazy part. Everybody listening to you knows how to do that. Whatever's the next thing. Some things will go right, some things will go wrong, and most things are somewhere in between. You know, they usually don't turn out in the way I planned it.
It does seem that sometimes people get a little paralyzed if they're trying to figure out what it is that they're to do with their life. I teach here at the university as well, and students will just feel completely just like they don't know what to do because they don't know what the next 15 steps are. And they want to know that. It seems like we're so programmed to want to know what the end game is. But you write, that's not the way we should approach life at all, especially if we're reflecting this love of Christ that we have. Talk more about that.
Part of that is you just don't want to screw it up.
Right? Sure.
The people that you know that want to screw it up, you know, they're usually in prison somewhere. So most people don't want to fail. And I get it. I don't want to fail either. But here's the deal that changes inside of people. I'd rather fail trying than fail walking. And something, I don't know if it was a Tuesday, but something flipped inside of me. They let me teach at Pepperdine Law School. Can you imagine me at a professor at a law school? I'm like, everybody passes the bar. So I teach this class, and it's on success and failure. I just talk about people that have succeeded and things have gone great. But that's what everybody wants to talk about. But the only people that I let come and talk at the class are people who have failed in front of everybody. Mm-hmm. So they succeeded in some things and then just epic fail. And we're not defined by our failures. If we could get that through, we do riskier things, right? So we're not defined by our failure. A more insidious problem is some people are, think they're defined somehow by their big success. Like something went right and they think they're a winner because they did. We're actually defined by the way that we love people. Here's a great idea. I was thinking about that this morning and talking to some friends. If you take away what you're known for from you, or take away whatever it is that you're known for, what would you be known for? Tell me the second thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So take away, I used to be a lawyer, right? So I was known for being a big lawyer. Take away that. What would I be known for? Take away, now some people think I write good books and put balloons on them. And I say, okay, take away that. What would I be known for? Isn't that crazy? So be known for the right stuff. Be known for things that actually last. I've been spending my whole life doing things that work. And some work great and some work lousy, but either way, they kind of work. So stop doing just what works. Say, what lasts? And God talked a lot about kids and justice, and he's nuts about both of those. But he's also nuts about loving people, everybody. That's somewhat of a saying, every day, love everybody, always. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to love you. You're like super nice. But start out with the people who creep you out. Figure out who creeps you out. You just don't understand it. And just don't love them. Mm-hmm. That's where you grow. Loving nice people is easy. That's low-hanging fruit. But love the people that you just don't get. Really? I don't understand vegetarians. I'm not mad at them, but I'm like, have you ever had a Whataburger? Awesome, right? But so as soon as you get to know a couple of vegetarians, you start liking lettuce. It's crazy how that works. So love people you don't understand. It's not a moral kind of thing. It's just like a life thing. If you don't understand Buddhists, go get to know a couple. If you don't understand Baptists, go get to know a couple. And you'll actually start liking them. And you know one person in the Philippines, and then a storm hits it, you go oh, man, I love those guys. Everybody, right? You meet one person, you feel like you've met everybody. So I'm just spending all my days now just trying to meet people and love everybody. And I'll tell you, I have a hard time. There's a lot of people I just don't get. I meet them, and I'm just scratching my head. I'm like, buddy, I just don't understand that worldview. But the thing that's changed inside of me is I'm not trying to straighten them out. Our job, love everybody. God's job, whisper what they want. They'll whisper what they want. We're just supposed to love them.
Well, one of the big ideas in your book is that there is a difference between knowing about someone and actually loving, regardless of what you know about them. And we do seem a little perplexed with this culture, with this idea in our culture, because the knowing part seems to be so important.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so sometimes you don't want to be around people you don't understand because you kind of don't want to get any on you.
Mm-hmm.
In my worldview, looking at the way Jesus encountered people, he's get some on you. You look just like me, right? So I spend my whole life avoiding the people Jesus spent his whole life engaging. Mm-hmm. So I'm I just want to find those people. And he gave us a little bit of a hint about that. He said, like, well, we meet for the first time. Like, I don't know what that's going to be like when you get to heaven, but I want to ask God, like, how did you make Yosemite? Like, what were you thinking? Two waterfalls or three? Mm-hmm. You know, why did you put them on the right instead of the left? And why do, how do pupils work the way they do? Like, you know, when it's light and it gets small and dark and they get big. But you know what? He didn't want to talk about any of that stuff. It says, when we meet, they'll say, I was hungry, and he gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and he gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and he invited me in. I was sick, and he visited me. I was naked, he gave me something to wear. And I was in prison, and he came. That's it. Hungry people, thirsty people, sick people, strange people, naked people, and people in jail. And naked people are hard to find. So I'm just trying to find everybody else. You know, how can you be helpful? And like that's it. And you know why? I want to have things to talk about when we meet. And that's all we want to talk about. Hungry, thirsty, sick, strange, naked, jail. So I'm learning, just like you, just like everybody who's listening. We're learning that I think there's a couple clues where to start. And it's to start people that make you a little uncomfortable. Because, you know, he even talks about that. What benefits of bringing somebody over for dinner if they can do something for you? Like invite somebody who can't do anything for you. Hmm. That doesn't mean bring people that can do things to you. But just like bring people that just aren't the ones that it isn't driven by status or title or dropping people's names or any of that. It's just driven by, like, you strip all that stuff away. Yeah, I want to be known for the guy that loves everybody. Always.
I'm talking to author Bob Goff today. He's written a fabulous book called Love Does. If you haven't read it, you need to get it. If you have read it, it's worth a second read. The subtitle is called Discover a Secretly Incredible Life in an Ordinary World. We're going to talk more with Bob when we come back after this quick break. And if you're listening today and you live in the Midwest or can get here, the University of Northwestern is hosting their annual leadership conference called Fuel. And Bob is just one of the amazing speakers who's going to be here. And believe it or not, we have several tickets to give away. And if you're listening, you want to bring maybe your church staff or a few friends. Well, you should go to our website at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. You'll be able to enter into a contest to win a package of tickets to come to the Fuel Conference on September 19th, and all the details are there on the website. We'll be right back in just a minute talking with Bob Goff. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Joe Bender. Very blessed today to be able to speak with Bob Goff. Bob's a New York Times bestselling author of a book called Love Does, but that's only one thing he does. He's also an attorney who founded Restore International, which is a nonprofit human rights organization operating in Uganda. And Bob, you've been doing this for several years now, correct?
Yeah, I think this is year number 15 since I began wrecking my career. I used to be a pretty good lawyer, but I started like loving people and it's wrecked everything.
So you write, though, that you don't know what that path, you may not know step 14 and 15, but what was step one where you said, hey, I think maybe I'm supposed to do something a little bit different. Tell me how that worked.
Yeah, the first step is always towards. You want to take a step back, but if you're moving towards, you're probably moving in the right direction. Like, that's the people that change the world. They always move towards it. And the people that are, like, cynics, like, they seem to be, like, taking notes about it. And I'd rather just move towards it, right? I've never met one courageous cynic. Somebody who says, oh, yeah, and they're going to roll their eyes. But if you love the people that's in me the way Jesus did, you'll be constantly misunderstood. That's just the way it's going to be. And so I'm not surprised when somebody misunderstands me. That's just Tuesday for me. I'm like, whatever. You know, I don't say roll my eyes either. Like, some people just won't get it. And I'll meet a couple of janky people along the way. Like, you've met people you just don't get. But here's one of the things that I've been doing. I try to come up with the least creepiest explanation for whatever just happened. Right? I talked to the church yesterday. And somebody came to the church with a snake around their neck. I'm like, oh, my gosh. But I went to least creepiest explanation. I thought, well, maybe she doesn't know. I know. Maybe she was, like, walking under a tree and, like, just ducked, and the snake ended up on her. I can come up with a whole host. Everybody can. Really creepy explanations for people, but you live your life terrified then. But if you come up with the least creepiest explanation for things, then you just you find yourself like kind of grinning. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it's a scarf. Maybe she has a collection. I don't know. So one of the things that's been helping me to love people better is instead of going to general quarters every time somebody like disagrees with me or something, I just come up with that. I just think LCE, least creepiest explanation. And I'm a lawyer. I mean, I think I'm right for a living, mm-hmm. right? Even when I'm wrong, I think I'm right. But I'm trying to be humble. You can actually be correct and not right. That's what I'm working on. I'm trying to be humble. And I'm talking to you here in San Diego. And I live down on the water. And a lot of people know where I live now, apparently. And they drive their boats by. It's so awkward because they'll talk about me. And they don't realize I can hear them talking about me because their voices carry over the water, right? And it's got me thinking, I think the voices of humble people carry further, right? So it's just like, somebody that's right about this, that's just another person who's not humble. You can actually have a correct opinion and if you're humble, it's actually going to last in people's lives. I've had people in my life, and I'm sure you have in yours too, that spoke words of truth. And the more humble they were, the more they found shelves in my life. And if I didn't have a shelf for what they had to say, it's like I built one. Because I'm like, that is so good. The words spoken from humble people, like they just endure in our lives. And that's the guy I want to be. Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier about, if you weren't known for what you're known for, what would you be known for? And I would want to be that guy, the guy that was humble, the guy that loved people. Oh, and a third one for me, the guy that's available. Those are the things that I'm thinking about these days. And just not being afraid to try something and not have it work. Oh, my gosh. We're trying to figure out today a place to stay in Somalia when we go tomorrow. I'm not that big on advanced planning. Every hotel I've ever stayed in there, they've blown up. Like, they're all gone. I'm 0-2. So what we're trying to do is not, you could look at all that noise and let that distract you, but if you were trigger locked on the difference it might make in a young person's life to change, make a small little feather in the balance of helping to change a young girl's view of herself, like that would be so worth it. And it's not bravado, it's resolve. It's like just saying, I've just decided, like that's something that's going to last.
When you took that first trip, whether it was to Uganda or Somalia, where you did take that first step, what was going through your mind? Like, oh my goodness, what I did actually is making a difference. And how do you get people to do it?
Yeah, I think for the people that are listening in, I guess the idea of just taking the next step and not trying to start by making an organization. I mean, Jesus didn't have one. He just picked 12 people, and one of those was even a dud. Mm-hmm. Like, he picked 12 people, and he said, let's go just change the world by loving them. So my first step was actually with my kids. And remember one of the stories from the book after 9/11, we don't have a television in the house, and if, the president gets a girlfriend or a plane hits the building, they ought to hear from dad. Hmm. So I told them the plane hit the building, and I asked them, if you had 5 minutes in front of the leader of any country in the world, what would you say to him to make sense of life and what you're hoping for? And so Adam was our first to go. He was 7. And he said, you know what? I'd invite him over to our house for a sleepover. I'm like, that's awesome. You remember sleepovers afterwards? You think buddies with them? So he wrote that down. And then Richard was the next one to go. And he said, I would ask them what they're hoping for. Because who knows? Maybe I'm hoping for the same thing. And he wrote that down. And then Lindsay was our last one to go. And she said, you know what? If they can't make over to our house in San Diego for the sleepover, I'd ask them if we could come over to their house and videotape an interview with them. So we downloaded the CIA website. We got the names of every leader on the whole world. I felt like I was hacking NORAD. So we got the name of every leader, king, dictator in the world, and they sent them each a letter and said, hi, we're Lindsay, Richard, and Adam Goff. and we live in San Diego, and we want to know if you want to come over for a sleepover. And if you can't make it, can we come over to your house and do a video interview and get a message of hope that we could pass on to another world leader from you?
Wow.
And so we got a post office box because we didn't want Ahmadinejad to know where we lived. Hmm. So we sent all these letters out, and then all these letters started coming back, and they all said no. They were really nice, but they said forget it. But then the kids, like, got after school, they got this package of letters, and they opened up one, and it was a leader of Bulgaria. And he said, children, if you'll come to the palace in Sofia, I'll give you your interview. And the kids went nuts. They're like, oh, my gosh. And then the prime minister of Switzerland wrote to him and said, if you'll come to Bern, I'll give you your interview. And then the president of Israel wrote to him and said, if you'll come to Jerusalem, I'll give you your interview. We got 29 yeses. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
So I pulled the kids out of school. Their teachers had a cow. I'm like, sue me. So what we did is we just went around and just, it wasn't about us. These leaders, they didn't want to meet Sweet Maria and me. They wanted to meet these kids. So sometimes we're fooled to think it's about status and title and all that jazz. And it's really about a childlike faith. That's Matthew 18:2. Like, unless you change and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of God. Like, that's it, a childlike faith. And guys know childish, and there's a big difference between childish and childlike. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on the childlike part. The wonder, well, like, no, who invented Dippin' Dots? And I actually found the guy, I met him, he's super nice. Mm-hmm. Like, where did, just be curious about everything. And if faith is a big deal for you, you'll be curious about your faith. If it isn't a big deal for you, you'll be curious about something else. I want to know how to hotwire a car, not because I want to, like, do grand theft. I just, like, I look in the movies, there's always a couple wires that are always right there, right? What if you're curious about everything? Mm. And then you'll be curious about things that last, and you'll want to do those. I don't know if you can hear on the other side. Are you hearing that beep come through? That's another phone call. I wish I could patch them together. But I'd answer it. Otherwise, if we weren't on the radio right now, I'd just answer it. But what we'll do is I'll give them a call when we're done. And there's something really honoring about just being available. Like, mm-hmm. pick who you want to talk to. I think unless it's Obama, I think he should pick up the phone. I think she should pick up the phone. I think if we were a world, a family, really a family, we'd just answer each other's phone calls. And there's something just beautiful about that, mm-hmm. something simple. People, we don't need organizations and programs and all that. They're fine. I'm glad the Red Cross is around. But we really, really need a bunch of people that just know how to love people that aren't like them.
Well, Bob, we have to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a minute to talk more with author, attorney, humanitarian Bob Goff, and we'll be back on Connecting Faith.
Oh.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I'm just so blessed to have on author Bob Goff today. He's written a fabulous book called Love Does, and it's just about how, when we know we are loved, what do we do about that? And Bob is going to be coming to the University of Northwestern. He's speaking at their annual leadership conference called Fuel. It's on September 19th, and if you've been to it before, you know how great it is. We have just a lot of national speakers, authors, pastors and leaders who come. And if you'd like to get tickets to that, we are actually giving away some. You can go right to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you can find out how to enter. We would love to have you here on the campus of Northwestern on September 19th. Well, Bob, you've kind of made it your mission to help people who might consider themselves to be too ordinary to become these secretly incredible people. What makes you passionate about communicating this message that we can all be secretly incredible?
I think the idea probably starts with my own failings in that. Look at the way that Jesus dealt with people. There's a story about him healing a couple of guys who were blind. And I thought that'd be pretty cool if I healed somebody who was blind. I'd make a big deal about it. But he said, like, don't tell anybody about this. I'm like, no. And then he did this Jedi thing, and some guys that have leprosy, they don't anymore. And I would have gotten a skywriter to say, check this out. And he said to them, don't tell anybody. And then he raised a little girl from the dead, and he said, tell no one. And I mow the lawn, and I want to get a hoodie that said, Bob mows the lawn, right? On the back, it says, yet again. Right? And so, I don't know. There's something about, like, beautiful and enduring about not making a big deal about the things you do, because we'll never be like Jesus if we make it all about us. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm a guy that's missed that. I had a stupid website that said, like, serving the poorest of the poor, as if I'm going to, like, step over poor people and, like, say, get out of here, you poser. I want the poorest of the poor. And I made it about me yet again. And so what I want to do is just, if we could just let our hair down a little bit, and I've got no speech to give to anybody, but I think we can get together in small or large venues and just talk about how could we pull this thing off? And we just don't need to make much of ourselves, but we can make much of who God is and who we might want to turn us into. Mm. But we get wrapped around the axle trying to be popular. And we're like, lose popular, because it doesn't matter. That's that idea. Like, forget what you're known for. What else would you be known for? Tell me the second thing. And popular usually isn't the second thing. It's usually the first thing people are known for. So if we could get popular out of the room, then we could just, like, substitute that for meaningful, for available, for relational, like, that kind of stuff. And then just make some moves. Like, just whatever you're good at. I'm a pretty good lawyer, so I try cases against bad guys. People who do bad things to kids, we do bad things to them, but we use the court system to do it. And Uganda, they have this horrible practice of child sacrifice. They actually believe the head or blood or private parts of these little kids have these magical powers. And in the history of Uganda, nobody has ever taken on a witch doctor, but I'm not afraid of them. They're punks. Mm. You know, my worldview is that Jesus has all the power and these guys got nothing left. But we took one on, and we tried the first death penalty case in the country. And so this idea of loving people doesn't mean, like, just skipping through the tulips, giving ice cream bars to everybody. It means, like, love and justice. They go together. There's no justice without love, but there's no love without justice. I mean, they go together. So how could we do both? But with a view towards how good and rich and meaningful life could be if we engaged it the way some of the people that we've seen that have changed the world have. And I'm not, love ain't my idea. Somebody way cooler. Right? So what we're trying to do is just kind of stumble towards it by being engaged with one another, seeing hurts, and just trying to help. And I used to think wishing was helping. I used to think hoping was helping. I figured out helping is helping. Mm. And so, you know, being empathetic to somebody's, that's a great start. But I want to move, at least for me, I just want to move from empathizing with somebody to actually being helpful. And people, again, are afraid that they'll mess it up. They just have great hearts, but they don't want to mess it up. And there's a guy who's smarter than me that wrote a book called When Helping Hurts. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, I totally get the premise of the book, but I just think helping helps. But some people are so afraid they'll help in the wrong way. Go for it. Just help them out. If you mess up, you'll be the first one to know and help differently the next time. And everybody's different. Again, like, I just would be like, you know, more ready, shoot, aim. But I hope that we can help a lot of people along the way. And I'm not worried about quantifying all of this. And pure love doesn't need all the spin. I don't know if you've gotten any newsletters from me. I'm guessing not, because I don't send them. Because I'll make it about me again. You know, I just want to make it about the kids. And so I'm a pretty good lawyer and do some other stuff. So I'll just do what I can do, and you do what you're doing. And here's the beautiful part. Like, I don't have any pointers to give to you. I'm not saying, well, you really ought to tweak what you're doing. this way or that way. Actually, I started doing something. Try doing this for yourself. I have an app on my phone. Maybe you have one too, where I can do some banking. And every time I tell somebody a word of correction, like I tell them they're blowing it, they ought to change it, I charge myself $500 and I give it away.
Oh.
That's about a round trip ticket to Maui. So when I like have to like want to do that, I literally think to myself, do I want to go to Maui, or would I rather like tell this person a couple things they ought to do different? And it's not like you're just avoiding conflict. I just think our words are costing us way more than we can afford. And I just want them to actually cost me as much as they're costing my relationships. One woman that got this Love Does book called The Number in the Back, and she called up and said that a friend had given her the book because she just got diagnosed with a brain tumor. And I was like, oh, honey, like how are you feeling about all this? And she said, here's the worst part. Like, she goes into an operation 4 days later on Tuesday. And she said, when they go to operate on the tumor, they take out the part of my brain that lets me speak.
Oh.
I'm like, these are the last conversations you're having with anybody. What are you saying to your friends? You know, and if I had 4 days to speak, I'd be like, I'm feeling great. And he can't even shut me up. So I'd be like, ah, ah, ah. And you know what she said to me? She said, I'm being really picky about what I say. Isn't that beautiful?
Huh.
What if we're, if you want to love people, what if we're really picky about what we say to people? And words that, like, lift people up, right? Not blow sunshine at them. Don't, like fame, admiration, all that. That's nothing. But find words. Like, hold up a little mirror to somebody. Go do this with somebody that works at the station. Hold up this mirror, and they can see themselves and say, let me tell you about that gal.
Mm.
Let me tell you about this guy. He's humble. He's caring. He always goes for the worst parking spot at church. Like, those words will last in people's lives. It's crazy how that works. So I want to be picky about what I say. I want to say things that actually matter. Love Does. It is this in the faith community, it's a popular book, but it doesn't have a single Bible verse in the whole thing. But we don't need, like, the Bible's full of Bible verses. I just want to write a book where everybody could read it and feel welcomed, like just everybody. And if they're big, oh, can you hear that other call coming in? I love it. Welcome to my life. So here's the deal. Just like welcome everybody in our life. Like we're the verses, right? No scripture inside and out. If faith is a big deal for you. But let everybody feel invited. And because we've done that, it's in 9 different languages now. And there's, but love always means the same thing in all 9 languages. I love it. It's crazy. And in Arabic, like the word Jesus is Isa. And Isa is in the Quran like 25 times. And so all the people read it in Arabic, they go, I love that guy. I was like, I know, man, me too. So what if we just do that? We just do, we use a currency that everybody understands to love everybody always. And then there'll be people you don't understand and you love them too and say, hey, how can I learn to love them the way that Jesus did? And it usually involves just being humble and actually wanting to learn from them, being curious about how they got to their worldview. And that doesn't mean you're wearing a reverse full jersey just because you're talking to somebody that has a different worldview than you. Or they think differently about the social issues that have us really divided. Just get to know them and be fascinated. Just love them. God will whisper to them what they want. You're not going to change their mind. It'll be God. And our job will just love them. And the crazy part is we'll change. We'll change into a more humble version of us.
You know, I've heard you talk about how we need to just be courageous to take that first step and humble at the same time. But I also have heard and used the excuse that I'm way too messed up for God to see any value in continuing to pursue me or to use me. And you wrote just a great little story about origami. I'm just going to read this quote and then I'd love to have you speak to it. You said, when each of us looks back at all the turns and folds that God has allowed in our lives, I don't think it looks like a series of folded over mistakes and do-overs that have shaped our lives. Instead, I think we'll conclude in the end that maybe we're all like human origami, and the more creases we have, the better. Why does this work?
Yeah, that idea of we kind of count ourselves out. Mm-hmm. We say that we've tagged out because we messed up in a relationship or in a marriage or in a business deal or somewhere we go. And then somehow we whisper all these names at ourselves. Sometimes we shout them at ourselves under our breath. Some people that are listening are cussing at themselves or calling themselves all these names. You know what Jesus calls us when we've messed up the worst? He leans over our shoulders and he calls us beloved. And I know that's nuts. I don't know about you, but I get a bunch of junk mail at my house. I get about a foot. And what I do is I just look at the return address. And if I don't know who it's from, I just throw it away. And one of the problems we're having in some of our faith communities is that people are reading the junk mail. You don't need to do that. If it doesn't say beloved, it ain't Jesus. I mean, you're listening to somebody else, but I'm telling you it ain't. It's Jesus. Does that mean he says everything's terrific? No, of course not. He said, just change. Lean on me. You actually need me to do that. I want to do things that would be impossible without my faith to accomplish. But I don't need to be like this infomercial for Jesus. He's got this thing. And I want to be a person that just loves. I want to just do my part, which is just loving people and then doing difficult things. Things you go like, dang, I have no idea how this one is going to work out. And it's actually helping to grow. It doesn't mean that you're being frivolous. It doesn't mean that you're this risk, you know, this like daredevil. No, we've got all these men in our world trying to man up and get the camos out. And I love them too, but we don't need to do that. Just be faithful. Be like a trustworthy person. Be available. That's courageous stuff right there. You know, so you don't need to, if it involves flying somewhere, I don't know. I just think we'd be confused if that's where we think we help. Go home to your wife or your husband and just tell them who they are. I've got a red plate that says I'm very special. Do you have one of those?
Oh, we have one of those too.
Yeah. It doesn't mean I'm very special. It just means Sweet Maria spent $20 on a plate. You know what makes me special is the people in my life who know me and that see these things in me that I don't see in me. Like they see who I'm turning into, and like that's what makes us special. So go home, and you know, if you do that once or twice, some of the people closest to you will think you're nuts, that you just jumped the tracks. And you know what? You have. You said, I just want to replace the way that I've been doing things with the way that I could be doing things. And they're just more loving. And you don't need anything. You don't need matching T-shirts to do that. You just like say, I don't know. Just send a text message to somebody who's bummed you out, that broke your heart, messed you over in a business deal. And the short version of the text message is this: sorry. And then press send. Don't say sorry, you stink. Just say sorry. And the long version is really sorry. And then press send. And you're just becoming more humble. You're going to get a text message back that's just going to have 5 question marks. They'll be like what? You know, don't worry about it. Like that, like, if you want to lead an inexplicable life, like give people inexplicable love. Just like do that. And not to draw attention to yourself. Don't make a big deal about it. Just say like, just trying to have, and there's some scripture verses in Matthew 5 that talk about that. We got these churches that have these stupid signs that say, turn off your cell phone when you come into church. And like, you go into church, turn yours on. And Matthew 5 says, if somebody's been out of shape with you, go square up with them, then go and worship. So that's what I'm trying to do. I've sent more than my share of sorry text messages out. I mean, I had to extend my like data plan just to cover all the like, oops and sorry and my bad kind of text messages, but I'm growing. I'm getting humble. I'm just getting real with that stuff. If you don't, you end up carrying around all this luggage. You'll have more luggage than Delta Airlines, right? Just say, just try to travel a little lighter. And we actually keep, if you came over to my house, you'd see a suitcase by the front door. Isn't that crazy? Like, I see that suitcase, and I just remember, like, if it doesn't fit in there, you can't take it. And actually, even if it does fit in there, you can't take it, probably. But I just want to pack light. Whatever helps me pack light, you know, that's what I want to do. And so being available is packing light. We sold all of our cars. Isn't that crazy? In April. I'm like, we don't need them. Just pack light. So I've got, like, and turns out I've got 1,000 cars. They all say Avis on them now. And they don't have, like, crunched up, like, you know, Cheetos in the carpet. So, finding, there's this thing called Uber. And why did I do it? I could have afforded a car. But I thought, what? How would I grow and change if I didn't have one? And it's been terrific. You know, we were going to talk a little bit earlier. I had to find my way to a place I could. And I use my skateboard to get there. And I'm an old guy. It's awesome. I can do wheelies and everything now. So what did you say? I want to change. We people that say, you know, we're a new creation. But if nothing's different, that's just delusional. So changing stuff. I quit something every single Thursday. And I just quit stuff. I quit. Like every day, I quit this board of directors of some awesome, like, change the world nonprofit. And I called them up last Thursday and I said, I'm out. And they're like, how come? I'm like, it's Thursday. I quit stuff. I think if we could offload a little bit of the stuff we've collected in our life, we could actually make some room for God to suck beautiful things in there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's one blind man showing the other blind man where the bread is, right? So I'm still figuring it out along the way.
Well, today I'm talking with Bob Goff. He's the author of a book called Love Does, also an attorney and founded Restore International, which is a nonprofit human rights organization operating in Uganda. We're going to hear a couple more stories from Bob. We have time for just a few more, but right now we have to take a very quick break. You've been listening to Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm thrilled to be talking to Bob Goff today about his book, Love Does. And the subtitle of his book is Discover a Secretly Incredible Life in an Ordinary World. You know, a lot of times we do feel a bit ordinary, Bob, but you tell a story about a man who I wish I could meet named Randy, who kind of taught you what it meant to actually be with someone. Can you tell us a little more about that and what you learned about that?
Oh, yeah. I was in high school, and I didn't grow up in a church or anything. And there's this outfit called Young Life, and they're like, you know, college age people come to high school and get to know the folks and invite them to, here's just in a really low key setting, just to hear about who Jesus said he was. And so I said these guys spotted from a mile off, and I kept my distance. And there was this one guy named Randy that had a motorcycle, he had a beard, and he had a girlfriend. And I kind of hated his guts because I wanted a motorcycle, a beard, a girlfriend. I didn't have any of that. And so that he would show up at my games and, you know, be nice stuff. And I did. He was like this Christian, so I kind of set my distance. And he didn't see the effect. It was just like, obviously, just wanted to be a friend. And I really hadn't had anybody that had ever done that before, but just was like interested in me. And they had a program where you could get out of high school early. Maybe they still have it. It's like, what is that, the GRE? It's some class you take where you test out of high school and you can graduate early. So I decided I was going to move to Yosemite and be a rock climber and take this test and get out of high school early. I was going to drop out. And the crazy part, I couldn't figure out how to sign up for the test, which was an indicator, right? So I went to Randy's house after I packed my car to head to Yosemite. I knocked on his door, and he came to the front door. This was on a Sunday morning. And I said, hey, Randy, I've decided I'm going to move to Yosemite and dropping out of high school. And he looked at me and said, like, really? Like, when? And I'm like, now. And I looked, pointed at my Volkswagen with all my junk in it. And he said, like, you're going to move to Yosemite, and you're going to get a job, and that's it? I said, yeah, you know, I just want to thank you for, like, just being a good friend. And well, he said, well, hang on a second. And he goes to the back room, and I wasn't in a hurry because I had all the time in the world on my hands. And he came back to the door, and he had his backpack over his right shoulder and a sleeping bag under his arm. And he said, I'm with you. And I'm like, really? Like, you're with me? And he said, yeah, I'm with you. So we get in my Volkswagen, and he throws the stuff on top of mine, and we drive to Yosemite. And for the next couple of days, I applied at all these places in Curry Kid Village. I like to flip hamburgers and pancakes. And everybody would ask me, like, do you have a high school diploma? And I was like, no. And so I couldn't get a job anywhere. And on about the third day, were sitting on the bumper of my Volkswagen, and Grandy didn't like give me all these pointers or sound like my folks, or he just kept saying, "I'm with you." And I told Randy, you know, I can't get it. I think I'm just going to go finish up school. I'll drive back. And he didn't tell me. I told you so. What a smart guy you are to do that. He was just with me. And we drove back to San Jose, where I had grown up. And we pulled down his block, and his girlfriend was over visiting, I figured. And we pull into his driveway. And when we walk into his living room, there's all this tissue paper and boxes and wrapping paper on the floor. Plates, a mixer, a microwave. I'm like, I knew he wasn't moving. It wasn't his birthday. And then a nickel dropped. Randy had gotten married on Saturday. And I showed up on his door Sunday morning. And he didn't see me like an interruption to the best weekend of his life. He saw me as a kid who was about to make a big mistake. And all he did was say, "I'm with you." And then he was. And I think that was the most pivotal moment in my life in terms of faith, is I figured out this idea, God, of all the names he could have called himself, he called himself Emmanuel, God with us. And I'm like, I get it. It wasn't all the information. It was meeting a guy who was just with me. And I actually believe that might be true, that God might actually want to be with me in my life. Not just for me, rooting for me from the clouds, but just actually with me. And it changed everything. And it's 35 years later, and Randy and I are still friends. And for some people, they're like, listen to your program. Like, faith is a big deal for me. You know 10 times more about God than I do. But for some people, they don't know. They've just been kind of like pushing the peas around on the plate and be like, yeah, I get it, but not really. And if you just think about that idea that, like, somebody who would be with you, like, that's the deal. I was in Iraq 6 or 7 months ago, and I woke up in the morning at the school we've got there, and I couldn't see out of my right eye. I'm like, I rubbed it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, I couldn't see anything. And so I had 4 or 5 more countries to go to before I came home, and I'm like a knucklehead. I went to the 4 or 5 countries before I came home and saw a doctor. And he said, like, that is so stupid. I mean, buddy, like, so he operated on me the next day, and he said, I what can you see? And I'm like, not much. So he operates on me again, and he's like, how's it going? I'm like, not so much. And I started, after each operation, I started being the one asking him, how much am I going to be able to see and when? Those were the two questions in my mind. And you know what? He would never give me a straight answer. All he would say is, you're going to see more. But I want to know, like, how much and when. And sometimes what you just get from life as a promise from God is, you're going to see more. Whatever you see now, you'll see a little bit more later. And I feel like that's been my faith journey. Just like, you're going to see more. It isn't a bunch of information. I'll meet people like you, Jill. I'll meet people today. And I'll just, like, they help me see a little bit more clearly who I am, who God is, and who we're becoming together. And so that's the promise. If you come up, we're going to meet one time, and if you come up on my left, I'll see you coming. But if you come up on my right, you're going to scare both of us, right? I just keep thinking of the words from a guy I trust. This doctor keeps telling me I'm going to see more. I trust him because I'm actually seeing a little bit more. Am I seeing everything? Heck no, but I'm seeing more, and that's good enough for me.
Well, those are just very wise and encouraging words to end on, Bob. We just had a great time talking with you this last hour, and can't wait to have you here at University of Northwestern to encourage our leaders from around the area and our students as well. So thanks so much for spending this time with us.
Hey, thanks a million. I appreciate it.
I look forward to seeing you soon. You've been listening to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us.